podcast with Dan and Scott. Hottest golf podcast, whether you like it or not. First one back in the day when that's a put at the park. 7 p.m. special where they played after dark. From the birds to the focus to the losses and the win. Welcome podcast, patron to the show, lead the pen. Get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hottest golf podcast and I swear I ain't lying. Yeah. Leave the pen.
Welcome back, podcast patrons, to another episode of Leave the Pin Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan. Today, we've got Tony from Dragged Under. If you don't know Dragged Under, they're one of the hottest punk core bands out there, if you will. But Tony's also a golfer. So Tony was the former bassist, guitarist, and lead singer of Rest Repose. Once they split up, he formed Dragged Under, current lead singer of Dragged Under. In addition to that, he's a new father, talent manager at Pretty Good Agents. He's also the owner of Pretty Good Branding. So if you've gone to a concert, maybe seen some of those show banners, you may have had a hand in that. And finally, like I said, Tony's also a golfer, is the reason he's on this podcast. Tony, that's a lot of hats that you're wearing.
Yeah.
How do you find time for it all?
I mean, I got really good at managing the time for the businesses. You know, I figured out how to run them so that they make sense for me, so that they're still, you know, I still have profit and I still make good money from them, but they don't take an exorbitant amount of my time. So the businesses really don't take a lot of my time, honestly, and I don't get to golf that much anymore having a baby. The baby takes most of my time and energy.
That's kind of the full-time job now.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I easily put more hours into being a father than I do into work.
As it should be.
Yeah, it definitely. But there's a lot of guys that don't have that luxury.
Right.
You know, I work for myself. Like, I'm in my shop right now at home, and I built an office out here so I can be kind of removed from the house. So, you know, you won't hear him screaming or crying. but yeah, it's, you know, one thing I've had to do is start saying no to a lot more stuff. And I don't love doing that because I like, you know, I'm like a serial opportunist, serial businessman. So, you know, if people will come across with something like, hey, I'm doing this, or I'm doing this. And, I, you know, for a while we tried to do it. Golf hard goods company. We were selling golf balls. I tried to do like a golf, you know, meme page, and just tried to, like, I really wanted to immerse myself in that world. But, you know, it's almost like a curse to find something that is, that kind of keeps your attention and makes you successful. Because once you find that one thing that you're like, oh, this is where my money comes from, this is what I'm good at, you kind of just can't really abandon anything else to do that. Like, you have to be like, okay, I'm all in on this thing because it's what drives my success. It's what pays my bills. So I think that was been the biggest game changer for me in the last couple of years anyway, is just realizing that, like, I'm better off, you know, I'll make more money, I'll have more time saying no to new things, because, you know, at some point it's a zero sum game. You know, like, I might start a new business that makes me another 100,000, but I took my eye off the ball over here on my other two businesses and I lost $100,000 over here. Right. Sure. So, like, yeah, I've just been really aggressive these last couple of years about protecting my nest egg, and trying to find ways, instead of creating things that require me to work more, finding ways to make the things that make me money take less of my time. So that's been the life hack, I guess, for my last 2 years, is just focusing in on that.
Yeah, I like the fact of the word no, right? Super powerful, hard for some people to say, but sometimes saying no can open you up to other things and free your time up immensely.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, think just, and anyone who's ever not been able to say yes to something that they wanted to say yes to, it's because they didn't say no to something before.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're exactly right. Like, if I say no to, you know, going on this tour or whatever, or I'll use another example. If I say yes to something I didn't really want to do, but I did it anyway, and that fills my calendar in for a certain amount of time, and then a tour comes up, you know, now I've got to be like, okay, well, I either need to say no to this person I said yes to, or I need to say no to this tour. So you're going to have to refuse things in your life. And I think the best outcome is to be able to refuse them on your own terms. So, you know, the more you say no, the more you can say yes.
So if someone asked you out, they asked you to go golfing, right? Out where you're still in Seattle right now, in that area?
we
Washington-ish.
Moved. Yeah, okay. we're on the east side. We moved to a place called Walla Walla.
Okay.
When we had our, like, a couple months after we had our baby, because when I'm on tour, like, my mother-in-law was flying over the mountain and living in our house for like a month at a time. And, you know, didn't think that was fair to my wife, didn't think it was fair to my mother-in-law, and it wasn't fair to the baby. So it was just like, we had to put him in an area where he was going to be surrounded by people who care about him.
Gotcha. So
we left Seattle.
Very cool. So if someone invites you out to play golf and you have to say yes to them, you know, where's a course that you're playing out there? Where do you frequent? Maybe not so much nowadays, but, you know, back when you were kind of playing golf.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I don't frequent any golf. I have the sim at home. I have my simulator in the shop. So that's the country club that I go to now. It's just the simulator. But we have a course out here called Wine Valley. That's pretty nice. I like that course. There's another course in Pendleton, Oregon, which is about 45 minutes from me. That's called Wild Horse. It's like a casino course. That course is really nice. And then there's a country club here too that my father-in-law belongs to, but I've never played it. But I want to play there. And then there's a Muni called Veterans. So I usually probably spend most of my time at Veterans just because it's close and it's cheap. But it sucks. It's a sucky course. It's like it's like a below regulation course, like not exactly drivable greens for your average golfer, but you know, like there's probably a good handful of the par fours that, you know, a good golfer could reach in one. So, Which is not terrible, but it's like, you don't really want to have to like think about, like, if I'm on a par four, I don't want to think about what club I'm using. I'm just like, okay, driver, you know, unless there's some sort of hazard or something that I need to like mitigate.
Sure.
That's right in my drop where, like, you know, if it's between 230 and 250, it's like, that's where I'm dropping the ball, depending on the weather and the conditions, how good I hit it. So there's a river there or sand or whatever, like, okay, maybe I'll go less than, you know, hit a two iron or something off the tee. But yeah, I spend my time at Vets just because there's, you know, and there's really no hazards there. I don't think they have any water on the course. And there's not a lot of bunkers. And if there are, they're like really, really, you know, they're like 6-inch bunkers. There's nothing like Chambers Bay where you're 10 feet below the ground.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the local course that I play, this place, Indian Mountain, which all the listeners, you know, have grown to know about throughout the podcast. It's the same thing, dude. It's a 9-hole course. You know, there's no slope rating. There's no course rating. It's actually our home course for our high school team that I coach and that my son plays on. So,
oh, sick. You know,
it's wild, but it's the same thing. There's no water on it. A few bunkers. You know, the par fours are a little bit longer, but the really good kids are having these flip wedges into these holes.
Yeah. I didn't realize that you had a kid that was that old.
Yeah, dude, I got two. So my oldest is a junior right now, just finished his junior year of golf. So we're doing the whole recruiting thing, which started after the season, which has been super fun. And then my little guy's 14. He's an eighth grader. So they'll both be on the team next year together, which is kind of neat as a dad that coaches.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you have do you have like a plan for him for college? Is that what you're thinking about?
Yeah. So his, you know, every kid's big dream is to play D1, right? He's got a few D1 offers. Our second official visit. Every Thanksgiving, we go down to Pinehurst, just our immediate family, and spend Thanksgiving together. Just because we're so busy throughout the year, it's like the one time that the four of us and the pup can kind of get 10 unadulterated days, you know, together. So we go down there, and he actually just had a visit at Fayetteville State University. They gave him a real nice offer, which was cool. But again, he's in the middle of his junior year, so, you know, we don't need to worry about anything till next year. But it's just awesome exposure, and to have him see what else is out there, you know, and get to start to see other parts of the country too.
Yeah, you guys are in North Carolina?
No, we're in Northeast PA, actually, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. So, so he'll be living at the campus?
Oh, yeah. Like, his dream is to go down south or to go out southwest.
Yeah, southwest. Like, you really can't beat the golf if you want to spend.
Yeah, right.
Spend your college days in Arizona. It's probably the best place just to get a lot of, you know, a lot of at-bats, so to speak. Because, you know, the weather's perfect there all year for golf. Summer's a little rough, but you take summers off. You know, you're not in school during the summer.
Yeah, so. Exactly. He'd be back here doing tournaments and stuff. You know, it's a lot nicer than, you know, he went out the other day. It was 28 degrees and rainy and flurries. You know, today's a warm day. It's like 48, but it's just downpours.
Yeah, it's wet here too. It's same weather here. But, you know, it's I try to golf, you know, as often as I can. Lately, to be honest, these days, I do most of my golfing when I'm on tour. Because that's where I find the time. And our other guitar player, Sean's gotten into golf, which is really cool.
Okay.
He's a good athlete. You know, he played baseball growing up and stuff. So he's an athletic dude. He picked it up pretty quick. You know, for only playing for like a year, it's like he'll make some shots where I'm like, dude, I wasn't hitting those shots till I was playing for a couple of
years. Yeah, some people just have it.
And I played since I was a kid. I just took a massive break. So like my story in golf is my stepdad, he was a professional golfer. And he wasn't like on tour, he was like a card guy, right? So for those
like a class A PGA tour pro, PGA teaching pro.
Exactly. So he could instruct, he could work in the pro shop. And he had, you know, qualified with his card. And I guess those guys can compete, right? He just never
did. Sure. Yeah, so they can accept money and stuff. It's just that they're not tour pros. They're not the guys you're gonna see on TV. Like those guys, you know, granted, they may know their swing, but they're not going to go out there and teach you, right? Because they're so self-absorbed and so worried about their own swing. They can't put any amount of time into anybody else's.
Right. Yeah, yeah. They don't. And it's, you know, a lot of them just, I don't think they couldn't make it. Like getting a PGA card and being on tour is two completely different things. Like you got to be good to get your PGA card, but just having that, just qualifying for that, you wouldn't make any money on tour.
Yeah, I mean it's the 0.00001% of golfers that play on the PGA Tour or any tour for that matter. You know, I've got friends that play out on Latino America and PGA Tour Canada and China and Alps Tour and Corn Ferry, and they are mind-blowingly good. Yeah. Like not even in the same stratosphere as an elite amateur, and they can't even sniff getting on the PGA Tour.
Yeah. It's interesting how big of a difference there is from like Q school to pros. It's because I play with guys where I'm like, dude, you're fucking ridiculous. Like you're
sick. Yeah.
But then again, we're playing, you know, a whatever 100 slope course, like
sure, 6,500 yards or whatnot.
Yeah. They're not playing, you know, Bethpage Black 7,800 yards like in the wind. So you know, that golf's an interesting sport. So what I was saying was, I grew up, my stepdad. You know, we had a net in our backyard. Mm-hmm. Like we had this little like secluded area up on a hill in our backyard where, you know, he had his net set up and I can go out there and take cuts whenever I wanted to. We were members of the club. I just think like for me, you know, like your boys have you, they have a really good role model to look up to and somebody they probably like, you know, and they enjoy golfing with their dad. And this guy was my stepdad. I didn't, you know, kind of a douche. Like we didn't like him, you know, he wasn't my real dad. So like, didn't really spend a lot of time with him. Didn't really care I didn't want to have the same interest as him, I guess was my point. And I guess I just didn't really know what I was missing out on. So as a kid, like, you know, I would go out there and play and I was okay. I wasn't going to win any kids tournaments, but I could hit the ball. I kind of knew what I was doing. I understood the game and the mechanics, and I took a big, big break. You know, I don't think I played for 12 years, 15 years.
Was that due to a specific reason or just kind of fell off and got into other things?
Both. Yeah. Mostly just time. Like didn't have the time to do it. I was pretty focused on hockey. I was buried in my job at the time, you know, like I was working so much and I didn't have at that job. It's like, I didn't have the time or the money to golf. Mm-hmm. Golfing is an insanely prohibitive, prohibitive sport to get into.
Yeah.
And that's why you don't see a lot of like, you know, like people talk about like racial or like the lack of diversity in sports.
Sure.
And it's not, you know, they're not thinking about it in terms of like, or they shouldn't be thinking about it in terms of race. It's a social economic issue. Like you don't see a lot of poor people becoming golfers. It's got nothing to do with their skin color. It just so happens that unfortunately some groups are more affected by socioeconomic issues than others. But like, that's why there are so many Black people that play football and basketball, because they're easy sports to get into. Like the barrier to entry is like very low, because you could just pick up a ball, go to the park, and play, right? And baseball's like that a little bit too, to some degree, which is why you have a lot of, you know, like poor people from the Dominican Republic that become professional baseball players. But like hockey and golf, it's like,
yep,
those people, they were probably already like wealthy or, you know, rich or had some sort of like financial privilege, whatever that is, from like birth, basically, right? So yeah, not to say like you're a rich guy, but you have two kids that play golf. You know how expensive it is.
I wish I was a rich guy, but yes, I do know how expensive it is. It's tough. It's really tough.
Even if you weren't like, you know, middle class, you really couldn't hope to like play golf at a high level, right, unless you had someone like giving you love. You know, like I work with a kid. His name was Ian. He was on my high school team that I coached 2 years ago. And he was very good. And he was a young African-American kid who was, you know, from like a poor family. And, you know, the school was helping him out a little bit. But his parents were like putting everything into this. It was like, whatever we need to do, you know, like whatever he needs, we'll do it. But I also was trying to like help him out. You know, I would like quietly float him clubs and stuff like that. Or like, you know, stuff I wasn't using anymore. I'd be like, yo, here's a 2-iron. I'm not going to hit this anymore. Or like, hey, here's a driver. I'm not going to use this anymore. But the school like frowned upon it. They couldn't know, which sucks about working in high school sports. Is that like, especially because you have kids on the team.
Yeah.
And it's real weird. But like, you know, I would like give him stuff on the sly just because I was like, this kid could be like, he could do whatever he wants with golf. He just needs the support. But the school like won't let you drive them, you know, like.
Outside.
It's fucking bullshit, man. It's so lame.
No, I know completely. We just had an incident. My oldest son made it to state to qualify for the state tournament. And the school said, we're going to rent a bus, take you guys out there, and the bus is going to be on call. And then they told us, well, the bus is going to be $4,000, so we can't afford that, so we're just going to pay you guys mileage rate, which is great. I'm making a shit ton of money off the mileage, you know, because they give me like 70 cents a mile or whatever. But the other guy I coach with was going to go out there first because he works in the school that my son goes to. I teach at a different school.
So
they said he can't drive him out there. I can drive because I'm the dad. And I said, but wait a minute, I'm also the coach. So you're telling me since I'm the dad, I can drive, but you're telling him because he's the coach, he can't drive. So shouldn't that preclude me from driving as well? And they were just like, well, and I said, look, it just boils down to the fact you don't want to spend $4,000, you know, to put a bus driver out there. Like, I get it. Yeah. It's so tough nowadays with high school sports. And I love that because we talk about it on this podcast a bunch, the barrier to entry for golf. And it is astronomical. And even though there's first tee programs and youth on course programs, you know, I still personally don't see the diversity that everyone thought was going to come with the advent of Tiger coming onto tour. You know, there's a lot more, but quite honestly, like someone like Steph Curry with his underrated Under Armour tour has done more for minorities, I think, than someone like Tiger ever could have done, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think Tiger, you know, and it's not like, I don't usually like having conversations like around diversity, because I think the subject is so, it's very nuanced, because unfortunately diversity only works one way, right? Like
a lot of times.
Yeah. So like you don't ever hear anyone, you know, complaining about the lack of diversity in basketball. It's just like, we need to stop talking about it in terms of like skin color and just like we're talking about now. We're talking about the socioeconomic barriers to the sport, because Tiger's the greatest golfer that ever lived and he's black, you know, like it doesn't matter. His skin color had nothing to do with it.
He's also Asian and he's also white, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the point I guess remains is that like, I don't think that his parents were rich. I don't think that, you know, Earl Woods was a wealthy guy. I think they just beat the shit out of this kid.
Yeah.
And just buried him in the sport and did whatever they needed to make sure he was successful at it. And that's what it takes. It doesn't matter what the sport is, but like kids are getting better and better at every sport, basketball, you know, football. Like these kids are freaks, you know?
Yeah. Look at like Wembanyama in the NBA. Yeah. Dude's nailing
on the planet right now. And he's 19 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, in golf, you have that too. Like there are kids, you know, like kids like Charlie Woods, who it's like, he goes out, and I mean, obviously, you want to talk about privilege, like having your dad is the best golfer on the planet, probably has $100,000 simulator in his bedroom. Like, but who cares? You know, like that had to start somewhere. Like, I'm not taking that away from him.
Well, the bottom line is you've got to put the work in, right? Yeah. Like, you could be the most privileged, you could be the most talented, but it's time. And I think that's the biggest thing with the socioeconomic status in golf is that, you know, the more money that you have, yes, it allows you to do more things, right? But it also allows you more time. Mm-hmm. If I'm a poorer person, then the majority of my time is probably spent at work. And if I'm at work a lot, that means that any of my secondary activities, my hobbies that I like to do, have to be either scheduled in or they've got to be cut out.
Yeah, it's hard. Really hard to dream when you're just trying to survive.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
That's like one of the things I think that really disenfranchised me about like golf, organized golf, youth golf as a coach, was like, obviously there were schools that were quietly recruiting, you know, because there was kids like our high school called Kamiak out here. It's in a place, well, on the west side.
Okay.
It's called Mukilteo. And this team was unbelievable. They won every tournament. There was a kid at the range, and I was just there with one of the students, like doing some private stuff. And just watching this kid golf, and I was just like, dude, you're sick. Like, where do you go to school? Yeah. You know, hoping he'd be like, oh, I go to Meadowdale. I'm like, cool, you're on the golf team now. but he was like, I go to Kamiak. And I'm like, oh, great. So are you going to be in like the, you know, regional tournament this week? And he's like, no, I'm like a scratch. Like, I don't play on the team. He's like, I don't go to tournament. Cause you know, you bring what, like three or four.
Yeah. Five or eight, depending on. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So this kid was like, had a great swing, was hitting the ball a country mile and, you know, was at the range for fun and wasn't even on the team.
Yeah. So wasn't good enough to make the cut.
Yeah. And he would have been our number one if he was on our team. So like, and then you go to the school and you see the kids that are playing and it's like, they bring like seven Korean kids to regionals and they just fucking dust everybody. They win by like 12 strokes or something like that.
Now, was that a private school, like a Catholic school or, no.
Okay. And it's a public school.
It's a public school.
Yeah. But I was just like, okay, like I see what you're doing. Cause like, you know, what are the odds? Like, you know, this guy is the coach, his kids, you know, he knows his friends that play golf. They all decide they want to come to Kamiak. And that happens a lot, actually, especially in golf, is people will fake like an address, right? Because I want my kid.
Happens everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know, but, they'll be like, well, I'm going to, you know, register my son at this address because then he'll be in this district. And it happens in hockey, too. And it's unfortunate. Like in Canada now, because it's such a big sport there, they have what's called districting, where like, And there are ways around that. People do the same thing. But basically, it's like if you live in Abbotsford, you play here. If you live in Surrey, you play here. If you live in the city, you play here. And so it's almost like, you know, you have like a regional teams and it's like a little bit of pride. You play for your neighborhood type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have that here. So like a lot of kids would just go across town to the bigger organizations and play hockey for them. And, you know, like the smaller ones would just fold until eventually there's only like one or two left. So, but we saw that in golf too. But anyway, my point is back to like, you know, this kid, Ian, you know, he's like one of the only African-American golfers in the district. Like we go to these events and I'm just like, you know, it's a small sense of pride, but it's also just like, dang, it sucks because I feel like a lot of these kids, you know, are just not playing golf because it's expensive. And like, you know, we're having to do all these fundraisers and like this simultaneously blew my mind and drove me crazy. And I wanted to like call the mayor or something about it. I was like so pissed off that the course that we play at is called Linwood Golf Course. It's a kind of shitty muni. It's a small, like less than regulation. There's no par fives.
Yeah.
That course is on was given to the city by the school district. And then they have the balls to charge us to play golf when we show up. So like the golf course wouldn't even exist if it weren't for the school district.
Yeah.
They gave them the land and said, yeah, make a golf course. That'd be cool for the community. And then they turn around and charge us to play on it.
That's just nickel and dime and, you know, nickel and dime people to death.
Yeah. And it's like, and it's ridiculous too. Cause it's like, what are we asking for? Like, two tee times a day, three times a week. And I'm spending my own money so that these kids can go to the range more often than not. Right. So like, I basically just opened up a tab at the range and was like, my kids are going to come up to the desk and just say, hey, I need a bucket for Meadowdale. Just give them whatever they want.
Right.
And using my own money. Cause I'm just like, if I don't, you know, we're supposed to have 2 hour windows here at the range. What are we going to do? Putt for 3 hours, you know, like just go to the like small ball area, putt and chip.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they need to know how to do that. But like, these guys can't even get to the green. We have to be hitting driver. We have to be hitting long clubs. So, you know, we're going to these events and like, we're going to the range twice a week for 2 hours. But my budget for balls is $200 for the whole season. And I'm like, dude, I'll spend $100 in range balls in one session by myself. This is ridiculous. So like, you know, I started to just like get a little bit closer with the community. I started to get involved with the range and just kind of like leveled with the guy. And I'm like, look, man, this we're one of the high schools in one of the poor areas. You know, we don't represent, you know, like Mukilteo. We don't represent Mill Creek where these guys play at the country club. You know, their high school plays at a country club. We play at a muni that we share with four other schools, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And their girls teams. So, you know, I'm just kind of level with the guy. I'm like, look, I know it's like, it's not crushing your bottom line to come here and like for us to come here and, you know, take a couple bays, you know, but if you could give us whatever you can do for us on the buckets, we'll take. And so they eventually cut us a deal. Like one of the dudes was working there, nice guy. And he was just kind of being like, I'm just going to set buckets of balls up here. And, you know, if the kids come and grab them, then they do.
Yeah.
And so like, he kind of just started floating us balls and he was like, don't worry about paying for them. Just, I'm going to set buckets of balls right here. And if your kids see them, just say, hey, go grab one of those balls. Bring
it back. That's awesome. That's
because it's like, you know, what is the wear and tear on a range?
It's not. It's minimal.
Yeah. Like the 200 balls we're going to hit that day, they're not going to make a difference in your life at all.
Yeah.
You know, and they're charging us what, $20 a bucket or something crazy like that. And it's not, I'm not shitting on them. They're running a business.
Sure.
But I would do everything I could. Like, and it pissed me off because I would tell like the athletic director, I'm like, I have a simulator in my house. Like we don't have to spend money. Like I'll bring it to the school. I'll bring the brain and the computer to the school. I just need a place to hit. And we talked about like setting up an area like in the batting cages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the softball team had four state-of-the-art like batting cages outside and they were sick. And so I was like, all right, if I can source a net, you know, can I hang it up in here? And can we use one of these? Can we dedicate one of these cages to the golf program? And she was like, yeah, I don't see why not. Cause it was an off season sport, right? We were playing when the football team wasn't. So I went to golf tech and I told my coach there, I was like, yo, if you ever get rid of one of these nets, you know, let me know. And like the next week he was like, yo, come by. And he gave me like this big net that I gave to the school. It was like, hang this up in the ladies, like one of the softball cages. And like, this will be our hitting bay. And then it was partnering with a local business called Back Nine Parlor in Linwood. And they donated, I think like four or five sessions in the season for the boys and the girls. So I would just basically like whatever I was doing, I would just loop in the girls coach and be like, mm-hmm. They're with us type of thing. You know, like I didn't want to leave them out. So they donated like five or six sessions at their systems. And they had like full swing simulators. So they were nice, but it was cool. Kids could come inside in an air conditioned environment, and golf is a winter sport here for whatever reason. So it's rainy half the time.
Right.
So it gave them a place to go inside where we didn't have to just be like, no golf today. So, you know, like getting involved in the community and having other people rally around the school, it was a big deal for us because otherwise there was no other way to execute our season. And, you know, and like, I know that it's not a profit driving sport. So like, I have no disillusions about, you know, like that it is not something that necessarily helps the school, like football, mm-hmm. You know, like we're never going to have a stadium for, you know, for the golf team, whatever, like, you know, there's just not the resources for a sport that doesn't drive revenue. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny though, people say that, right. But think about the sport that's going to be played for the entirety of their life and it's golf. So someone that plays on the golf team that let's say stays in the area, maybe then in turn gives back to golf. And then everyone that was on the football team and baseball team and softball team and soccer team eventually are probably, if they continue in sports, are going to transition somehow into golf, whether it be a charity tournament or anything. You know, it all kind of funnels back to that sport. So I get it. And believe me, I see it at the collegiate level too. Like golf is 100% paid for by the basketball and footballs of the world.
Yeah.
But all those guys, all those girls eventually at some point in time are going to have their hand in the golf world. And you can't say the opposite. You can't say that a golfer is all, you know, at some point in time going to have their hand in the swimming world or the soccer world or something like that, right? It's that universal sport that kind of brings people together of all walks of life.
Yeah. 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 And that's like, that's kind of what it's hard to impart that wisdom on children.
Of course. Yeah, I know.
That's kind of one of the big things I told them was like, you know, they'd be like, well, you know, like I had one kid that I was like, yo, he's going to be my number two. Like I had my number one and my number two picked out. And my number two was like, yeah, I'm going to do track. And I was just like, you run on the golf course, you know, like, what do you want to do track for? Like, are you so sick at track that you're going to get a college offer, you think?
And he was like,
well, probably not. So I'm just like,
we might be two peas in a pod. My number two this year, the night before our first practice, texted us and said, I'm going to play football. I said, you haven't played football since you were in seventh grade.
Yeah.
Like legit, you had a shot to possibly make districts this year. Yeah. You've been on the team for 3 years and now you're going to play football.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the year, especially senior year. It's like, so it's such an impactful year for them because they're bigger. Like they're kind of like in their stride, you know, they're mentally, they're a little bit more focused. They're a little bit more mature. So like I had one senior this year and it was a dude who could barely hit the ball. So that was a bummer. Like my team was very young, you know, but 3 years from then they would have been great. Like if those kids all stayed. But it's also hard to keep a coach because they don't pay. I was donating my pay back to the school. So like, I think school is red tape, but I was like, well, just take my money that you're going to give me and just put it into golf boosters. And they're like, we can't do that.
We can't do that because you need to jump through 18 steps first and sign off on anything. And then possibly we might be able to do it.
So basically I was like, okay, well then loophole, I am going to make private donations back to the school in the exact amount of my paycheck every month. And they were like, you can do that. We can't stop you from doing that. I'm like, all right, cool. That's what's going to happen. So I think one of the times I donated that to like the girls booster. And then the other two, I just put back into the general booster fund. Cause that's not what it was about for me. It was like, truly it was about changing kids' lives. And I realized that I can do that way better on my own. Unfortunately, like when you introduce the government and particularly like the public school system, they can only slow you down.
Look, if schools were businesses, they'd be bankrupt within a year. You know, I mean, I work for a school. I've taught for 23 years now, and it is unbelievable how poorly run and mismanaged these places are. And quite honestly, and what I tell people all the time is the fact that you would think in education that you would have educated people, intelligent people, people with of course, varying degrees. You know, I have my master's degrees plus 48 credits past that. And I work a lot of times with idiots. And most of those people are the administrators. And that's what's unfortunate is that the good ones are the teachers. But a lot of times they're beholden and they are handcuffed, you know, by their administration. It's tough. Yeah,
my wife, before we had our baby and she stopped working, she was working in education and she was she was a para for a while, and then she's a sign language interpreter. That's her trade. So she was doing sign language interpreting for the school district, the same school district that I was coaching in.
Okay.
For, I don't know, the better part of like 2 or 3 years. And their golf team, actually, the school she worked at, actually had a hard of hearing player. So sometimes she would actually interpret the practices or the matches. But you know, it's like, just hearing this, her stories, you know, and especially when you're dealing with like deaf plus kids. So kids who are deaf and then also have maybe a disability, which is pretty common, right? Cause they have a lack of access to language. So then they don't develop properly. So, you know, she's just dealing with like these kids and it's like, you're hearing the saddest shit and it's just like, okay, well, like what does this person need? You know, like, what do they actually need to like get out of the situation? And it's like, a lot of times it's stuff the school can provide. And a lot of times it's stuff they can't, but won't let anyone else, you know, like they almost put up a wall between like a child and their success because of like red tape or fear. Like,
yeah,
we're not allowed to like you know, do this. And I'm like, all right, well, I am. You know,
yeah,
a lot
of times the wall's up there between common sense, you know, and the solution, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is just so much red tape. It's just everyone's afraid, you know, because it'll be like, oh, you know, so-and-so's, they don't have enough money for food or something like that at home, like their food. I forget what the term is, but there's like a special term, food insecure at home. And I'm just like, okay. So like I can open up a credit card at Safeway and they can just, you know, go in there and get food, you know, just shit like that. It's like, I'm fortunate to be in a position where like the endeavors professionally that I've taken in my life have netted me a certain amount of comfort. And it's fucking ridiculous to me that the only thing that separates like students, golfers, sports people, and non sometimes is an amount of money that the government would squander like this.
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay, cool. We just spent 40, you know, million dollars on a bridge or whatever. Like, you know, and then it overran $60 million. Okay, cool. Well, that money could have fed every student in every school district in Seattle for the next 3 years. It's just like, drives me fucking crazy that the people that run these programs and there's some stuff that I get, like, okay, they can't come to my house and use my private simulator because of like safety concerns. And it's like, okay, but you know, I'm on the golf course with these kids alone all the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Some things are good. Some things are, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate. It's just, it's kind of the way it is, you know, unfortunately.
It's just what they can protect themselves from. That's all they care about. It's like, well, you know, if you were like to, and I'm going to get gross here, but just, you know, if a coach were to like molest a child on the golf course, well, there's nothing we could do about that. But it's like in the, you know, engagement of the sport, like we can't be there all the time. Like that's fine to them, but like that they can't go to your, you know, like your private simulator space where we could save hundreds of dollars a day and the students could get a better education in a private space and excel at their sport. Cause you know, something bad might happen while they're there, which we can't allow. Cause it's just like, you know, if like you said, common sense, like if you're concerned about the child's safety, the thing to do is to find a coach that won't hurt them.
Right.
Like, and provide as much oversight as possible, but like, you'll let me be alone with them here and not here. But one of them is like really beneficial for us and can help us a lot. And the other one is just a golf course. So like I get, you know, I've done like Safe Sport, which is like a course you have to do to coach hockey because you're in the locker room with boys, you know, and they're dressing and changing and stuff like that, you know, and most of them are not even getting naked. They're just like in their underwear or they come to the rink with their gear on and they leave with their gear on. Most of them aren't even changing at the rink, but it's like you do these courses to like protect the children, but it's like, it's all just for show. Almost
a facade. It's all a facade.
It's just so they don't get sued. And yep. That's like, to some extent, fine. Like there are some rules in place that are helpful. Like some of the Safe Sport rules where it's like, there always has to be an adult in the locker room, so the children aren't hazing each other. And that stuff's valuable, but then there's just shit where it's like, okay, so I'm only doing this so that like you can fire me and then you can't get sued. And they'll basically be like, yes, that's why you're doing this. That's why we have the rules. But it's frustrating because I'm just like I'm not, I have no interest in like hurting the children. I want them to be.
Yeah. So you're like, I'm there for golf.
Yeah. I want them to be so good at golf that it makes your head spin. And the best way to do that is to like do it in this particular space where I have access to the best technology and it's free. But nope, can't do that. Sorry. I mean, it's like, well, send an administrator, like send another teacher to come watch, like pick somebody, anyone that you want. They can be there the whole time we're practicing. But like, you know, there's just no one else invested. If they don't give a shit. If it was the football team though, you know, I bet they'd figure it out.
Yeah. Well, money talks.
Yeah, it does. And it's frustrating to me because it's like, well, I can, you know, I can provide all of that. Like I'm not worried about my stipend. I'll, you know, give that to someone else so that they can come twice a week to this space and watch us play and watch us work in the simulator. You know, like there's solutions, but they're just, and I get it too. Cause the athletic director is always so busy. Like they're, focus on all the sports. And if they take their eye off the ball from football or baseball or basketball, where there is an entry fee, to focus on golf where there's no money coming in, it's like you could imagine the quarterback's dad is going to have words for them.
Right.
Which I get. And it's, you know, like there's, I tell people like on our hockey team, because I take it pretty seriously. I always want to win, and they always kind of give me shit. They're like, dude, it's adult league. And I'm like, yeah, but this is my NHL.
Yeah.
I don't have any, there is nothing else for me. Like, so that's one of the cool things about being a kid and like the opportunity you have as a father and a coach is to be like, for me, you know, Tuesdays at the club, Tuesdays men's league, yeah, that's the tour for me.
Yeah.
That's all I can hope for. You guys can still go to the tour. You know, like your life is still there. So like I really totally understand parents when they obsess about their kids, especially if they're good. You know, like your kid has offers to, what is it, like a D2 college?
Yeah, he's got D1 and all the way through D1, 2, and 3 right now. Yeah.
He's got D1 offers. So like you as a parent, if the school was just like, yeah, we're just not going to invest in the bus. And if I was a parent, I would be like, yo, I'm freaking out right now. Like,
yep.
You know how much fucking work we put in to get D1 offers. This is it. This is like from high school, the best you can hope for is, well, going pro at high school, but in golf, that's not really a thing.
Yeah.
But the best you can hope for is a D1 offer. That's winning a Grammy. That's,
yeah. You know what's funny with golf though? It's recruited so differently than other sports. So a lot of the college coaches, they're going to look at your high school, but they know, like you were talking about before, how they're playing like substandard courses. Mm-hmm. You know, what they really look at are your 2-day tournaments over the summer that you're playing, because that's going to bring together kind of the top players from the area, as opposed to you saying, well, yeah, I went out and shot 70 or I shot 2 under on, you know, this course, but it was against one other team. You know, I played against 2 kids that were decent. But yeah, you enter some of these big tournaments, and then now you've got 35, 40 kids, mm-hmm, you know, that were all those number ones. So in that respect, golf is recruited completely differently because, you know, look, it's like track, it's like cross country, it's like swimming, wrestling. You beat someone, like, you're the man. You win, you're the man. You know, you're the woman. You're the top dog. So in golf, they look at your scores, and it's like, okay, this kid shot 75, 76 on a 6,800-yard course. I love that. Right, it's cut and dry, black and white that way.
Yeah, it's one nice thing about golf too is like, yes, there are other teams playing, but at the end of the day, it's like you can still lose and put up a score that you can be proud of. Like,
oh yeah, hands down.
I shot 4 under. The winner shot 1,200. Yeah, freak. You know, like, and there's just sometimes nothing you can do about that. Like, so that's why I love it, because while you are on a, and I almost don't really agree with the idea of like golf as a team sport. You know, I could, because it's rarely a team sport. When golf becomes a team sport, it's like kitschy. It's like, oh, you know, the freaking, what do they call it? Like the PNC Classic or whatever, yeah, like the father's son.
Yeah, silly season events. Yep.
Yeah. So it's like golf is never a team sport, you know, or unless, I don't know, LIV Golf is doing something interesting now, or, you know, if it's a team sport, like you said, it's an event. It's like,
yeah,
look forward to it. You're like, oh, dude, it's the, you know, the concessions this week or whatever. And they do weird shit. Like, that's when you're like, okay, they're playing as a team or they're playing a different set of rules. But it's like golf is almost always that one set of rules, you as an individual versus other individuals. That's it. It's a field game. So, like, I almost, like, disagree with a little bit of how we do that too. Like, I never like when meetings, like golf meets, are like aggregate scoring as a team, because I'm also just like, there was something in the newspaper here in town, you know, we were a very small town, so we have like 2 high schools. There's like Walla Walla High, which was the only high school here for a long time, and then College Place is like a city, you know, like it's two towns, but it's really not, you know, like,
yeah, yeah,
most of it's one town, and there's like a little sliver over here that's
sure,
like,
of course, yeah,
so we have that, but you know, College Place High School is tiny, and it serves a much smaller population. But in the paper, you know, the it was like the front page Union Bulletin that the local coach like resigned from his football post. And it's just hilarious because people in the comments on Facebook are like, good, we haven't won, and da-da-da-da-da. Like, and it's just like, it gets you thinking because you're just really like, yeah, winning is like part of the job, but it's like these people have zero concept of what it is to coach at the high school level. I am getting what you give me. So they're just like, all right, make a pot. And I'm like, okay, cool. You have like, you know, clay and water. And they're like, no, here's some human shit and piss.
Make it work.
Put it in the kiln, you know, like, yeah. Yeah. So that's what they're getting, you know, like if I could like recruit, if I had the means to be like, I would love to be like a coach or a scout for like a D1 college, like ASU. Could you imagine? You'd just be like, well, what do you have for me? Well, we play at this gorgeous course where we have a, you know, $100 million facility that was donated by Phil Mickelson. It's badass. You got to come see it.
Have you seen those videos of that place?
I've played there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I've been there. I was on the range hitting balls and just like, yeah, that building, it's like hard not to look at. You're just like, damn.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Imagine being a college kid, like an 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid, and knowing that the next 4 to maybe 5, 6 years of your life is going to be spent in and around that facility.
Yeah, with Phil Mickelson might just casually pop in, say what's up.
Yeah, sure. Of course, John Rahm might swing by.
Yeah, you live in Arizona. Oh, that's right. He went to ASU.
Yeah.
You live in this golf mecca too. You're like, well, you can play a different course every week and not play the same course your entire college life.
Yep.
It's absurd how much golf is down there. But you know, it's hilarious. Like the difference that you have between like a public schooling and college, where it's just like, yeah, after this, it gets really, really competitive because if I'm a D1 scout, I can do that. You know, I can come to you and be like, who do you have? Like, who's your best guy? You know, and I can offer them cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because
you can offer them the world.
Because the golfers do. Because like you said, like they that's when it really starts to matter. Like Phil Mickelson, I don't know if he's going back to his high school and donating money. Maybe he is. But he went back to his college and gave them a lot of money.
Yeah.
So if you find the right people where you're like, yo, this dude's going to be professional. He's going to make $1 billion and then he's going to come back here and build us something sick. You know, like you can kind of, it's almost like stock trading when you're recruiting these kids. Cause you're like,
sure.
You know, what's his stock going to look like in 20 years? Is he going
to invest now for the long term?
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. We gave him free housing for 4 years and a college scholarship, you know, and we had to like give him a stipend or whatever. I don't know if they can even do that, but like,
they can. Yeah. With the NIL deals now they can. Yeah.
Oh, true. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we got him plugged in with you know, Wilson's staff. We got him plugged in with Nike. He's getting free Bridgestone balls. You know, whatever you have to do. And that's a really cool, interesting thing that's kind of happened in my world in advertising is like that opened up a whole new section of my brain to be like, oh, collegiate athlete sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Like how do we tap into that?
And very so like, big untapped market. Still, even with these NIL deals. You still only see it big time in basketball and football. But on doing some of these college recruitment trips that I've been on, you know, people have mentioned it. Like it's a reality, not just for the big sports out there. You know, just think about courses and small up and coming brands that kind of want to get their hands on a great college player or someone that looks good, you know, has great persona, great social media presence, complete untapped market.
Yeah, you don't even need to be like – so that's the thing with like what Shedeur Sanders is like good ball player.
Great ball player, yep.
But had like two of the best weeks in college sports history and then like hasn't really done a lot since.
And flip that into easily a mil in earnings.
Yeah, it took 1 week and then every brand was like, oh, what do we need to do? And he was like, yeah, a million here, a million there. And it's like – and now he can just be like, well, I'm going to go pro, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll just coast through college and – get endorsements and, you know, be in this Wingstop commercial or whatever. Like,
yeah. And cool little signature move, right? That's it. Everyone knows it. You know, you get into that niche market, it blows up on social media. And the next thing you know, you're an instant millionaire.
Yeah. And I mean, the only difference between like a cool looking signature move and a dumb signature move is how you play. So like,
that's it.
I think about that a lot with like Matt Wolf, where when he was playing well, everyone was like, I'm going to try it. You know, there's gotta be something to it.
Yeah.
That swing, and then he started playing shitty and withdrawing. People were like, going back to their old swing. You know, they're like, well, this is stupid.
Well, same thing like with Bryson. Remember Bryson with the one length irons?
Mm-hmm.
He was like, it's going to revolutionize the game. And like 3 years later, Cobra's like, yeah, bro, we're dropping you. This ain't working out.
Well, that's funny too, because they bit on that. They were like, mm-hmm. All right, we're believers. And then they started releasing. Like, remember, like you could go get fitted by Cobra, and they would be like, Cobra one length, and you could get them all the same length, which in my head actually makes perfect sense.
There's something to it. But the problem is you have to have a flat swing like that to make it work.
Yeah.
Like if you have a two-piece swing, there's just, you know, you'd have to change your swing up so much to allow those irons to work. But they work for Bryson's swing.
Yeah, because if you're not on plane, like every single time, you're totally hosed.
Oh, you're screwed.
That Bryson is like, he has this ugly swing, but he's like perfectly on plane every single time. Whereas like a lot of people do, like I have a two-piece swing and I think everybody should. Like get it up, shallow, come back through, like inside out. And he doesn't have that. His swing is like one of those little like the toys that has like the pull. And
yes.
You like hit the trigger and it does the like
swing action. Yes.
He has that swing. But obviously it's working for him. I mean, he's made a ton of money and hits the ball, you know. But I mean, Rory has a two-piece swing and he's half his size and he hits the ball.
Yeah. I mean, look, the only thing that matters is this much in the golf swing. And it's that far before the ball and that far after the ball. If you can square the golf club up, it does not matter if you look like Jim Furyk, Arnold Palmer, or Tiger Woods. It's irrelevant.
I'd love to look like Jim Furyk for the record.
I take any of those.
Swing in golf. I think it looks so cool.
It's you've seen like those shot tracer ones of the path of the swing there. It's so cool. It's amazing how he slots that club in right before impact.
Yeah. It comes in like super steep and he just goes like, oh, I got it. Don't worry about it. But he's so athletic. Let me see if I, check this.
Yeah. Out. That's like otherworldly hand-eye coordination, you know?
I don't know if there is a video piece to this, but this is like my run in the house and grab it if there's a fire.
Oh my God, dude. When is
that's,
it's when he was
cow. Stanley. That's from the USAM.
Yeah. 94. So the, when my mother-in-law, and I actually have somewhere in here.
And actually for the people that won't see the video portion that are just listening to the podcast, Tony just has a picture of Tiger on one of the USAMs autographed by him. Sick black and white. He's got his Stanford hat on. It's a two-piece photo. Kind of like his headshot on the one side and him swinging through. And that beautiful like pre 2004 swing that he had.
Yeah, exactly. When he was athletic, get around the ball. But yeah, it's cool because you can see like the signature. It's like genuine, like Sharpie.
That is awesome.
So when they back in the day, like my mother-in-law was on like the fair. Like for the fair, they would get like auction prizes, and they secretary for the fair. And 1 year, I think they bought that. You know, because they're like, oh, that's cool. You know, Tiger Woods, he's gonna be cool. And it just sat in a box for like 20 years. And she found it for 1 year. And then so for Christmas, she gave me that. And she gave me let me see if I can find it. Hold on.
Yeah.
I think it's right.
I just love the fact that it's just laying there next to a keyboard. And you just, you know, people don't just usually haphazardly pull up a Tiger Woods auto. That's not like on a golf cart or anything like that on a picture. That's so wild.
Feel different, man. All right. I forgot about this one too. But so this thing is crisp too. Like looks like it was just printed.
Yeah.
This is the 95 Stanford Men's Golf. Like the booklet.
Oh my God. Like their advertising booklet.
Yeah. There was when they were the defending champions, right? So this is Casey Martin, Noda Begay.
Yeah, Noda, yep.
Burdick and then Tiger. So that's like the actual program from the school. And then I forgot about this too. They got this at the auction as well.
Oh, that's all of them.
Yeah. So it's
the whole
like
entire Stanford men's golf team all autographed. Yeah, Tony, I will definitely put this clip up for people to see. They're going to flip. I got one of my good buddies that's a listener and follower of the pod does a golf card collecting podcast, you know, like baseball cards, but
yeah
golf cards. And he's got some amazing pieces. He's going to flip over that. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, that was really cool to get for Christmas because I was just like, you know, whatever, No to Be Gay, Casey Martin. Okay, cool. But like two separate autographs from Tiger before he was famous is crazy. And also, yeah. I mean, having the whole Stanford team, it's a little bit like, you know, having all the Beatles signatures on one thing. So it was pretty cool moment for me. But yeah, man, I wish I could play more truly. Like, I feel like I was, you know, just really getting into it. Like,
when's the last time you got out?
It wasn't that long ago. I feel like, Sean and I, my guitar player, Sean, the last time we played was in Sacramento. Aftershock. We did like the show Aftershock.
Yep.
We played a course in like Roseville the day before and we didn't finish. We played like 16 holes. It was getting slow. It was getting hot.
Sure.
And we had a show the next day. So I was like, yo, why don't we just get out of here and go see a movie? And so we, you know, got out of there, grabbed a pop and sat in a cold theater and just kind of relaxed. But that's kind of been like my thing with golf. Like since I was a kid, the worst issue I have with golf is I'm so impatient. So I'll sit up there on the tee box and be like, oh my God, these fucking people. Like, you know, they'll clear a par three and then like, you know, they're playing as a twosome walking and we're playing as a foursome.
Yeah.
And we'll finish the hole and like, they're just in the fairway. And I'm like, dude, what in the hell? You guys should be done with this hole.
Dude, so you sound like my youngest son. If the course was empty, he'd play 18 holes in an hour and 30 minutes. Like it's just steps up, rips it, gets to it, and is like, it's been tough for him to play tournament golf because it's so damn slow. It's unreal.
Yeah. Well, that's what really I think. That is the challenge of golf. Because if, like you said, if I was out there by myself, you know, and there's nobody, like the best I ever played through nine was one under. It was in Germany just by myself.
Yeah.
No rented clubs, no one there. It was this cool, like 27 hole German course. It was awesome. It was in like the foothills of this cool German village, like 40 minutes away from where we were staying. Cause Germany, like a lot of times, if you've never been there, it's like big city, nothing for an hour and like another city. So, I can't remember where it was. I wish I would have kept like a pencil or something because it was a very cool course. But I'm like just fucking hitting my shots. I like anything I wanted to do, I was doing it that day.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was like a doggy left and it was like short, you know, like drivable, but like kind of short. And I was like, whatever, I'm just going to hit a draw. And I hit it exactly I wanted to, like low draw. I was like, dang, I just can't miss today.
Yeah, you were in control.
Totally like in my zone. And then I got to like the 10th hole where I eagled the hole before. And then got to like the 10th hole par three and like there was like a 4-cart backup.
Yeah,
just like where did this come from? I was by myself on this course.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it just fell apart because I'm just like, you know, I'm sitting on this tee box for 30 minutes and I meet these cool, like these nice German people that let me play with them, you know, but then their game's a little different. You know, you're watching someone play poorly and then you're like, So that's a bummer about golf is it is very mental. And I think that if I could get over that, and that's something I'll teach my son is, you know, you got to get over that shit. You got to develop a, you know, one of my coaches, Martin Chuck, he's very big on like pre-swing routine, you know, mm-hmm. and like having those swing thoughts and stuff. And, you know, one of the best things he ever taught me was when you step up, actually, I think this was another guy who taught me this. His name's Mike. He works for a company called Bird Dog, I think, or Bird Golf in Arizona. And he taught me, he's just said like, what are you thinking about when you're in your swing? Like when you're bringing the club back about to hit the ball, what are your thoughts? And I said, well, you know, shallow turn and then like close the club face are like my three big thoughts. And he's like, okay, what I want you to be thinking about when you're hitting the ball is nothing. Cause he's like, you know, by the time you step up to hit the ball, you should have taken three or four practice swings. And that's, if you didn't get your thoughts out and the feels into the swing by then, you're not ready to hit the ball. So when you step up to the ball, you should be thinking, hit the ball.
Yeah, I always like the idea of like a thought box and then a play box, right? And outside of the ball, outside of like a 3-foot radius of the ball is when you're thinking about everything, when you're going through your pre-shot routine, when you're deciphering mentally the hole, what shot you're going to play, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, taking all the factors into consideration. Then as soon as you get over the ball, it's just one last check of a visual and just be athletic. Just swing.
Yeah. Yeah, don't think, just go.
And that's harder said, than done.
For sure. But you know, that's why I tell people, I'm like, dude, the cool thing about golf is a guy like Rory McIlroy, who's like almost my size. He's, I think, like a couple inch or an inch taller than me, maybe, because he's a 5'9 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if that.
He's 2 inches taller than me.
Look, that's on a good day.
Yeah, and but he's 130 pounds. Twig. Like, I have 80 pounds on that guy, right? Like, I'm much stronger than him.
Yeah.
But it's a mechanical sport. Yep. And then more than that, it's a mental sport. Because if I can, it doesn't matter if Bryson can outdrive me. If I'm just, you know, cool as a cucumber with a 4-iron in my hand and yep. can putt like nobody's business, he's not going to beat me.
So many ways to get it done.
100%, right?
So many ways.
No pictures on the scorecard. So, like,
no.
You just have to fucking calm everything between. I don't know. I remember who it was, but that was like the guy who said, like, golf is game of inches, and it's like these six.
Yeah, inches. 6 inches between your head. Yeah, it was Sam Snead or someone in that era there. Yeah,
just the winningest golfer of all time. No big deal.
Sam Snead. Well, until Tiger.
Still more majors, though, right? Sam Snead, I think, has like two more than him or something.
No. Tiger's second most. Tiger's got 15 now.
So who? How many does Snead have?
Jack's got 18.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Sam Snead probably has like, someone's going to fact check me. I know it. They're going to, you freaking idiot. I can't believe, I don't know. I'm going to go 3 or 4. And then my DM's going to blow up. I'm like, you're a moron. It's 2. I don't know, honestly.
So, yeah, I thought Snead was still the winningest. And I thought that Tiger was still chasing him for like 2 more majors.
No, he was, but I want to say Tiger's at like 92 now. And Sam Snead was maybe 90 or 91, you know?
Hey,
again, I get called out all the time. Again, you
no
know,
worries.
Well, they're like, how do you not know your facts? I'm like, because I'm talking to people. I'm not frigging on the internet right now looking, you know.
You're also a father of two. The fact that you can think of anything at all ever, a miracle. Because I have one baby, and I'm just like nothing is important, you know.
Yeah,
like, nothing matters to me at all.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to be, like I said, super respectful of time. I got one more question I want to get you out of here on. As a big fan of, you know, the musical genre, punk hardcore, like I grew up in the New York hardcore scene of the middle to late 90s, you know, when it was sick. Thriving out there and have been everywhere, you know, on Long Island into the city and has seen everybody, you know, 100 times over. There's so many musicians nowadays into golf. And especially in your genre, I mean, you guys have toured with Beartooth, Ollie plays, Caleb is an enormous player. His dad is a mental coach for some of the top D1 golf programs, you know, Phil in the country.
That's crazy.
Alex from A Day to Remember plays, like there's just so many guys. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just want to get your insight as to why. I mean, I love it. Don't get me wrong, but it's, you know, like you don't see. I mean, maybe you do. I'm not into country. So, you know, again, forgive me, people, for not listening to that. But there's just so many people that I see into that heavier genre of music that don't look the part.
Yeah.
That love the game.
Yeah, I think that the cool thing about golf, and honestly, you could probably like credit it to like Happy Gilmore, to be completely honest, is that you would never know who plays golf and who doesn't. You know, like, it's not that anymore. It hasn't been a like, you look like a golfer sport in probably the better part of 2 or 3 decades. And I think for music specifically, like, we've kind of always been here, right? Like, I was into golf before I was into music.
Okay.
By many years, right? I was golfing probably 4 or 5 years before I ever even picked up a guitar, right?
That's funny. I was the complete opposite. That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, I was a very lucky kid, and I was in a very particular situation where my step as a professional golfer, like, who has that? You know, like a lot of kids grow up and their dad is a musician, and I didn't have that. My dad played the trumpet. You know, my mom was not a musician. They didn't have any musical, well, they had ability and proclivity, but they didn't have, like, they weren't doing it. Like, I wasn't like, oh, I'm coming home, and oh, there's my mom, she's playing piano, you know, or my dad's in the studio playing drums, playing guitar. Like, I didn't get that. So, you know, my dad was a collegiate wrestler.
That's hilarious. So was I.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're kismet, you and I. But yeah, my dad had multiple D1 offers. He was a state championship wrestler. And he didn't do it because he wanted to be with a girl. So, but both my parents, when they met, they were bodybuilders. So like my dad and my mom were like both 0%, just absolute monsters.
Yeah.
Bodybuilders. So competing too, right? My dad has like so many trophies. He was like, I'll see if I wish I could find a picture. But he was like a freak. I'll see you just quickly. I know my sister has sent me like the photos before of his bodybuilding days. But you know, like you see people where you're like, oh yeah, that like that dude's a legit bodybuilder. Like my dad was an animal. So, you know, I think the thing that like when I grew up, that's kind of what I was I don't want to say forced. It's not right because I wasn't forced into anything, but I was just kind of around those things. So like I became a wrestler, I became a golfer, you know, and like I started riding mountain bikes with my dad because
it's what you're exposed to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's what if I wanted to hang out with my dad, I had to do those things. You know, he wasn't into golf. He wasn't into music necessarily. And he came to everything. Like, don't get me wrong. He was always there. But he wasn't going to like take up golf. You know, he was very invested in mountain bike riding. He was very invested in like wrestling. You know, so he coached me in wrestling for a while until I got tired of doing that. And then music, I kind of found music when I was around the age of 15. But anyway, to answer your question, I think that these guys have been into golf, a lot of them, because you don't just get like as good as Caleb Shomo just being like, yeah, I just started golfing, you know? Like,
yeah. Ben, yeah.
I think his brother's a pretty good golfer too.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole family is, I mean, it's, you know, literally same thing, came from like a family of professionals.
Yeah. So, you know, I unfortunately didn't get the things that my folks were into. I just wasn't necessarily that into until later in my life. Because like, it's the same thing when I try to reason with my college or my high school kids, you know, just being like, dude, you're not going to do a boys trip to play basketball.
Yeah.
You're going to do boys trips to play hockey and golf. And that's it.
Like, yeah. Cause you could just go to the park to play basketball. Like,
yeah, exactly. Right. And hockey and golf are like destination things. Like, oh, where's the rink? Where's the tournament? Like, you know, so those are the only two types of boys trips I ever do is golf and hockey.
Love it.
So, but these guys, you know, there's definitely a lot of guys getting into it now, like DJ Khaled.
Yeah.
But I think that guys, I think that there's just something visceral about the sport and that people don't understand until they do it. Like getting out there and flushing a drive or completing a hole under par, you're just like, oh, fuck, that felt so good.
Very, you know, addicting.
Ball. And like sometimes the club gets like stuck. Like you hit it and you're like, oh, I hit that so fat, but the ball sizzles off the face. Yeah. You know, like there's no feeling like that feeling of like the click of understanding how this mechanical physics works and being like, I just did something that I've seen on TV for a long time. And like, that thing is like exposure to golf is very mainstream, but actually putting on, you know, your soft spikes, buying a sleeve, finding some clubs, hitting the range, practicing to get good at playing golf. It takes a lot of work.
Great
and
point.
It's something that not a lot of kids do as a youth. So like when you grow up and you're like, yeah, I played football. Well, why? Because my youth program did it. My junior high did it. My high school did it. It was there. It was easy. My boys did it on the weekends. And we were playing Madden and we were watching Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football. My dad was watching football. Like the level of exposure kids get to like baseball, basketball, football, and the opportunities they get to do those sports are everywhere. So golf, it's like, you get to see it, but you don't ever get to live that until you have the means to kind of do it on your own. And for me, hockey was the same way. We didn't have high school hockey. Like some places in Midwest have that. Canada has that. We didn't have it in junior high. We went to go sign up to play hockey when I was a kid with my dad. And I think I was probably 12. And they were like, yeah, it's $5,000 for the season. It's absurd because there's a lot of travel, right? But like ice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that doesn't even include the gear. Like, $1,000 on skates, you know, $200 on gloves, $100 on a helmet, $400 on a stick, easily. So like, again, when you need equipment to play a sport, that sport automatically becomes harder to get into.
Right.
But these guys are looking for things to do in their downtime. I think COVID did wonders for golf because it was like, well, this is the only thing we can do outside with friends right now. So, and musicians couldn't do anything during COVID. So they had to find something they could do, and golf was it. So
that's a great point too. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I think that people are just seeing that it's like the tastemakers in the sport of golf traditionally have been, you know, uppity, pleated pants, you know, old guys. And when young dudes come around and interrupt the sport, like guys like Tiger, you know, or movies, you know, like Happy Gilmore, or TV shows like Holy Moly, like you just kind of start to go like, what is this? Like, what's happening over here? And like, what is this cool? You know, and you have DJ Khaled out there saying like, let's go golfing every day. And then you get guys like Caleb, you know, who are in a rock band or metal band, and they're out there golfing. Or Alice Cooper, right, has been a big golfer for a long, long time. So like, you start to see that you're like, okay, well, these guys are not that way. They're not this thing. And so maybe golf is for metal guys or outcasts or young dudes or whatever. Or guys.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm all for it. I'm in love with that. And honestly, like, if I had infinite amount of money, I would love to do a tournament with musicians. You know, I think they spend so much money on Netflix BS and stupid, you know, one-off silly season events. I mean, you could put something on YouTube and have musicians play, and I think it would be an absolute blast, because you would then get people in that were fans of the musicians, and then you have them play a show at night. Everyone does a 25-minute set or something like that over the course of 4 days or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I actually was talking to Joey, our manager, Dragnar's manager, about that. He plays in a band called The Used.
I mean, if you don't know The Used, I mean, come on.
Well, some people
yeah, that's true.
Legacy too, right? Now, you know, they've been around so long now that it's almost like they're on the other side, where they're like,
yeah,
they've been around so long that some of the kids don't know. But he plays golf, you know, he loves golf. And I talked to him about that too. I was like, dude, I want to put together a tournament where we stream it and stuff like that, and get like people involved. And, you know, just with my influencer contacts, it's like, we could easily do like a pro-am or something like that.
Oh, God, yeah.
But we also, there's a guy, I should introduce you to him. His name's Adam. He and I were talking the other week. I was going to help him do some design stuff, and I kind of dropped the ball, to be honest. But he has something called Musicians Golf Association. And he's trying to do something similar where, like, you know, we get like musicians together, or people in the golf industry, and just like, you know, do events, do tournaments, and then do like, I think having like a properly streamed, like you said, like a pseudo televised something with Twitch.
Yeah.
Because for a while too on Twitch, they were doing, there was like a golf simulator, channel, and they were basically like, you know, you'd have two people in two different places playing on TrackMan or something like that.
Yeah.
And they'd be playing the same course, and it would be like, I think it was one of them was like Sheldon Surrey, who's like a professional hockey player. And then like, you know, the Shooter McGavin would be there playing or whatever. And so like, you know, they would just have like this virtual golf thing, this virtual golf tournament thing. That was really cool. Plus now you're seeing like these TrackMan like lounges pop up everywhere. Golf, what's it called? Top Golf.
Yep.
They're doing a lot for the sport. So access has become a lot more easy to get, and you know, they kind of made like bowling for golf, essentially.
Yeah,
doing like gamifying golf, because when you go to the range, it's not a game, you know. You're just like, can I hit the ball? Yes, I have hit the ball. So like, it doesn't become enough to be like, oh yes, I can hit ball, okay, game over. Because that's kind of what people think of golf, is like, there's two types of golfers: people who can hit the ball and people who can't.
Yeah.
And so like, for a lot of people that are not in the sport, that's how they think of golf, is like, oh, I cannot golf because I can't hit the ball. And it's like, well, once you get to contact with the ball, there's a little bit more, you know, like, I hate to break it to you, but it opens up a lot more once you hit
the ball. There's a big can of worms there.
Yeah. So I really love what Top Golf's done for the sport. I think it's humanized the sport a lot. You know, it's kind of like, it's basically like the act of golf without going on the course. You know, you can drink beer with your buds and eat some wings and fuck off and watch the sports game. But you also get golf, and you get to like practice more than just hit ball. You know, you're like, put it in this hole, go drive further than your friend. You know, they teach you like, it's a finesse sport. So
yeah, it gives you some sort of stimulus response instead of just hitting it into nothingness.
Yeah. Right. Cause you could hit a ball onto a range you know, and depending on like what level you're at too, right? Like I'm on the third level, I crush that one. It's like, well, yeah, you're fucking 80 feet in the air. You know, like we all hit the ball 300 yards when the tee box is 80 feet higher than the hole. Mm-hmm. So, you know, or just little things like that are like when people hit the ball, you know, cause you'll like, you'll go to a Top Golf and you'll like hit one that to you was awful. You know, you're like, oh my God, that was a 30 yard fade or whatever. Like, you know, it's not a terrible shot, but you're like, that's not my shot.
Right.
And guys will be like, whoa, shit, nice shot. And you're like, oh yeah, well, thanks, but no, you know, like,
yeah.
And it's an unfortunate, like, part of becoming good at golf is like what people could only think, like hope to achieve is a bad shot for you.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I will throw my invisible hat into that ring to be part of that, because that is 100% right up my alley, that MGA or any type of streaming thing that has musicians and golf. That marriage, it's a marriage of my two favorite things in the world.
Yeah, I'll introduce you to the guy and see what, because I don't know what he's doing particularly.
Sure.
He manages artists. So I know he's in the music scene. But yeah, it's been something I've been wanting to do for a long time. It's just I just don't have the mental energy to spearhead it. You know,
understood.
Dude producing it. It takes somebody who's like, that's their whole world.
Yes. Yeah. So. For you, it sounds like it'd be something cool to play in and then play a show at, and then, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, I'd love to be involved as much as I can, you know, help find some sponsors. I'll print some stuff for it. Whatever I can do to help, that's in my wheelhouse, and I'll show up and shoot it like at 85.
Awesome. So. Awesome. Well, Tony, look, first off, I can't thank you enough for, you know, for agreeing to do it and getting to chat with you, but also for the amount of time that you've given my man, because I understand, you know, with the baby down and being the new dad, time is valuable, so that I am more than appreciative of that.
Yeah, no sweat. I mean, you caught us at a good time. Cause once you finally get him down, it's like the wife's in there now, she's holding down the fort, but, yeah, it's no big deal. I'm glad, cause you've been up my ass to do this for a while, and I just kind of been blowing you off.
Well, I'm persistent. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I sent my sister a text just cause I was like, yeah, send me some photos of dad. And this isn't the one I was necessarily thinking of, but I'll just show you like,
okay,
so this is kind of like what I was working with for.
Oh yeah. That's real, real. Yeah. Yeah.
And it hit my mom, you know, like they were doing the same thing. So like, you know, he's doing like muscle competitions.
Yep.
And just like focusing on, you know, this one, it's like golfing where it's like, yeah, I hit a cool flop shot, but it didn't spin, you know, it didn't do what I wanted it to do. Cause you'll have that on TV where these guys are like, shot, and you're like, oh wow, what a fucking shot. And they're throwing the club on the ground.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? So, like that's kind of like the bodybuilding. It's like, oh, but this like tiny little muscle right here, it's just not, it's not popping out like I wanted.
Yeah,
to.
I don't see the sinews as much because I had too much sugar before I started cutting.
Or just like, it's like instead of doing this motion on the sheen, you have to do it like this.
Yep.
You know, it's like crazy what they know, and that's golf. Is it's more, there's more to it than just being like athletic and strong and fast. It's like, you got to mentally be like, you know, especially when you see these guys in their pre-shot, and it's so interesting to see like Spieth now, he's like swinging for, like you're going to slice that, you know, when you see him do this, like over the top, like elbow release motion. And you're like, what are you trying to do? Cause usually he hits okay, like a nice little fade, but there are times where I'm like, dude, you fucking flew it. And like, you know, that weird move where he's like trying to hit a fade and he's slicing the ball like 3 times out of 10. So it's a fun sport, man, but I love it. I hope kids get into it. I hope it grows. It seems like it's in its, you know, it seems like it's just at the precipice of like being the biggest it'll ever be since Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
But we need that hero again. Golf doesn't really have a hero right now. It's got a lot of anti-heroes.
There are now. And I'm not sure that hero's in the pipeline, and I'm not sure that hero's one person either. You know, I think there's a myriad of people that could fill the role, but there's definitely, I mean, in my opinion, at least, there's never going to be another Tiger Woods. I mean, he just came at the right time, the confluence of events that occurred around his uprising in the PGA Tour. I can't fathom it happening again, but never say never.
Yeah. And his personality, right? Like,
for sure.
You never even had like a black dude that played golf at that level.
Right, that was coming in and saying, like, look, I don't give a damn about anyone. Like, I'm coming here to win.
Yeah.
And there's that famous interview with, I can't remember his name. Good player. I'll think of it once we go off air, I know. And he says to Tiger, he goes, you know, that's not how it works, man. You don't come out and just win. And Tiger's like, well, that's what I plan on doing. He's like, you'll learn.
Yeah.
You know, and they show that like every year after, you know, they list Tiger's accomplishments for the year. Two majors, 8 wins, you know, lowest scoring average, Vardon Trophy, et cetera, et cetera. And they show that video. It's hilarious.
Yeah. I am like, and I'll let you go after this. I don't want to take your time, but like, that's the thing I think I'll leave you with is that I've been really dismayed lately about golf. I think a lot of the PGA Tour players were like really bratty and super lame about the way they handled the live thing. Like, I can't believe it's like music. It's like, you know, if a new label came, right, and tried to do something revolutionary and different to like give musicians more stuff, more money, more exposure, more this, more that, whatever. And other musicians got mad at other musicians for signing to this thing. It'd be like, what is your problem? Like, what do you care? Everyone is in this sport to make money. Like, you're not a professional golfer for fun. Like,
yeah,
it might be fun, but it's like music. It's like touring is fun sometimes, but we do 8 hours of driving and get 3 hours of sleep to play for 30 minutes a day. It's not that fun, you know, and we're not making that much money. It's like, I'm doing it because I want it to be a job and I want it to make me a lot more money than I can do doing anything else. And so that's why these guys are playing golf, is to make money and
yeah, this
get the bag. And people like Rory were just like such pansies about it. And it really broke my heart because I loved Rory. I thought he was the next guy. And lately I've just been, and it's been nothing but sniveling from him. And it's really bothered me.
It's been a tough time in golf. And I know this is a lot. This is over some people's heads that don't know the music industry and are younger. But it is the exact same thing that happened when Lars Ulrich fought Napster. Mm-hmm. You know, he fought for artists' money and people got so pissed at him for doing it. And he's like, you know, sometimes people are ahead of their times. Yeah. And you can only see the genius and the brilliance with hindsight.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that seems like maybe Liv is here to stay. I don't know. I don't really get to watch the show. Like, I don't really see a lot of the events. I know they did.
You don't want to. It is the worst produced television maybe in history.
Yeah. It's, and that's the bummer, because it could have been sick. It could have been like, all right, well.
Should be with the amount of money they got. Should be freaking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everything's just an advertising play these days. So they were just trying to get the best names and okay, cool. Now we can get big money in advertising. But you know, even Netflix is on board. It's just the one thing I think that I hope that we can avoid getting into is like the, you know, Happy Gilmore-ification of golf. Like, I love golf and I think it should be fun, but I think there's a time and place. Like, I don't think that the, you know, 16th at Waste Management needs to be every tournament.
Yeah.
You know, like, we need to be.
Yeah,
like,
I'm in agreement, man.
Save those moments for like, okay, that's the party hole. It's going to be fucking crazy. You're going to have beer spilled on you. If you hit a hole in one, it's going to go insane. But like, you know, we don't need, you know, the Raiders fandom at every football stadium. It's like, there just needs to be like pockets of this stuff. And I think that like, you know, even the thing that like Netflix did you watch that?
Yeah, I did. I did.
It was kind of cornball.
It sucked.
Yeah.
I loved it. I watched it because I'm a golf nerd and I love the sport. But if we're being honest, like, it flat out sucked.
Yeah, it's, like, you don't, because that's what I think the problem is, the corporatization of golf, especially from like media conglomerates, is going to make people think golf is something it's not. And you see like these assholes like on Instagram and shit where it's like, you know, they're at Top Golf and like throwing the mustard at the guy while he's hitting, or like just doing shit like that where it's like, yo, on the course, like, this is not what golfers like me want to see. Yeah. And I'm wearing a Harley Davidson shirt. Like, I'm wearing a Western Wear hat. I got a mullet. Like, I'm punk rock, man. But like, I don't go to golf course to have that. Like, I have that in my life, and it's not
a
course.
There's a time and a place.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? There's a time and a place.
And we've goofed around on the course, of course. Like, you know, you've like bonked into your buddy's golf cart, you know, like,
of course.
Or, you know, took one of his clubs out and threw it on the ground, or unhooked his bag or something like that. But it's harmless. But there's a lot of guys that, like, you know, are bringing just total BS to the course.
Yeah.
And I think depending on, like, what course you're at, it's like, that's why I wanted to join a country club so bad. Because I was like, this shit won't happen there. You know, they'll regulate that stuff.
Yeah.
So.
But sometimes, I will tell you what, sometimes at country clubs, it's a different type of idiocy.
Totally.
You know, you're going to get it. You're going to get it everywhere. But I get it. I understand what you mean. And and the you know, the social media experiment that is golf, and how much that it's jumped. And believe me, I've benefited from it. Like, let's be honest. But I'm also not the moron out there blowing an air horn, you know, or knocking their friends over and stuff like that. And, you know, it's tough because especially like with kids in the younger generation, they're not sure what reality is, you know, to them, mm-hmm. Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, that might be their golf reality. And they think every single round is like that, you know, is stupid, is fun and games. And they have no idea what the PGA Tour even is.
Yeah. We brought a dude out. Sorry. It's cut me off whenever you have to go, man.
I got about 5 more minutes, honestly. Yeah.
Okay. I'm soaking it in just cause I'm getting some time away from the baby. So
I get it.
Enjoying this. but you know, like we brought a guy out to like one of our boys trips who wasn't a golfer, shouldn't have came, didn't want him there. And you know, like he did mushrooms on the course and was like, it was crazy. By like the last hole, he couldn't talk. He was driving the golf cart like up on top of the green surface, like right in front of the clubhouse. And we're just like, what is happening right now? And like the dude who brought him, we were just like, dog.
Yeah. And, you know, what are you doing, dude?
He's like, I know. I'm sorry. Like, I shouldn't have done this, but we needed another guy to offset the cost. And I'm just like, I would have paid for the extra cost to not bring this dude. Like, so yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think kids need to be very aware of social media and have that media literacy of knowing like, okay, this is not real. Like this is set up. Like,
yeah,
you know, they don't do this on the courses, or this guy's doing it for laughs and for shits, but it's not how we act on the course. And hopefully courses are leading that, like spearheading that charge about, you know, a zero tolerance of like overly ridiculous shit. Like if you're in crazy shots and just trying to do like silly stuff or whatever, and no one's getting hurt, fine. But like, you know, there's real world consequences to some of these actions. You know, like there was kids, one of the holes that like one of the courses I used to play at sits like up pretty high, and it's like 160 yards, but it's like 120 foot drop.
Mm-hmm.
So like you hit like a, you know, a pee wedge or something, you hit something real light and just let it fall. And it's above the freeway. And there was like, we're putting and I'm looking back up and seeing these kids, young kids hitting golf balls onto the freeway.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, they just don't understand. Like there's real world consequences to like some of these things. You could kill somebody.
Yeah.
And you get hit with that ball, you could lose an eye, you could die, you know, anything can happen. It's not a safe place to be necessarily if there's people out there who don't know how to play well. So, yeah. Anyway, a lot of thoughts on golf. I love it. I hope kids get into it. I hope it grows. But I'm a bit of a gatekeeper.
I think everyone's got a little bit of that in them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that'll always be my personality. And I think it's because I grew up playing at a country club. Right. So like couldn't even go eat at the country club if we didn't have a collared shirt. Like the amount of times my mom had to buy me a collared shirt because I forgot my shirt at home. You know, just because we were trying to go eat dinner. Like you walk into the clubhouse and they're like, where's your shirt? And we're like, we're going right now. We're going to go buy one because we forgot. Yeah. So, you know, I probably have 100 shirts at my, you know, youth size t-shirts that were just necessity purchases, $12 course t-shirts because it was like they wouldn't let me eat there otherwise. Couldn't wear denim, you know, stuff like that, tucked in shirts. So I'm from that very proper golf world, but I leave some of that behind. But I definitely want to be, I definitely want golf to continue to be a little bit elitist.
I love munis. I grew up on munis. I play munis all the time. But you know what? I love my friends invite me out to top-notch country clubs,
yes,
you know,
sir.
And I'm never going to deny that offer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Or going to Bandit or something, like getting that world-class experience. There's nothing like it.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's phenomenal where this game can take you and the people that it you know, introduce you to as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, thanks for having me. I'd love
Thank
to
you, sir.
Time. We can do it again soon, hopefully.
All right. Very cool. Tony, I'll put all the info in our liner notes from where people can, you know, reach you and see you, catch up, tour coming up in 2024.
Just right now, the only thing we have scheduled is Germany in April. Okay. So we'll be in Europe. If you're a European fan, check for us in Germany. Well, all around Europe, really. But and then hopefully U.S. late summer.
Awesome. Awesome. Can we talk any new music on the horizon? I know you said you were going out to record some stuff.
Yeah, I leave on Tuesday for L.A.
Okay.
To start the third record. So
sick. Sick.
Fingers crossed, third record, like middle of next year.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. All right. Check him out. Dragged Under, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get music. We'll put all Tony's info in the liner notes. And as always, either get busy golfing or get busy dying. Podcast patrons, Leave the Pin Podcast is super stoked to have Gashouse Golf as their official clothing sponsor for the podcast. Go to gashousegolf.com, find them on all forms of social media at Gashouse Golf. Gashouse makes affordable, eye-catching, one-of-a-kind polos that help you stand out from the crowd. Why spend $75, $100, or even more on polos that make you look like everybody else when you can get one at an affordable price from Gashouse Golf? Hit the ball a mile and look damn good doing it. Swannies is here with a fresh take. Performance-based materials are a given these days, but if you're looking for the stretchiest and most lightweight pieces that deliver a look that says I'm here for a good time, take a walk on the Swannies side. With fabric sourced from recycled plastics and design sourced from our very own Weekend Warriors, Swannies is looking out for both our planet and those that need a little style to boost their drive another 15 yards. Premium looks from top to bottom at swannies.com.